Rick from the Donut Kings. You're listening to Radio 103.3 FM WXOJ LP.
This is Out There. As the previous voice just said, you're listening to WXOJ LP Valley Free Radio. I wasn't sure if that had gone out live over the air or not. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring, for Out There. With me in the studio, I have Dwayne. He's raising his hand. Thanks for coming in, Dwayne, to help with the fun drive, particularly. Today's show is going to be an interview with Alex Jarrett about shared living situations and how you can make housing a little more affordable for yourself in Northampton, as well as maybe live with people that you love and enjoy, like co-ops, housing co-ops and stuff like that. I'll also have, for the second part, some clips from a little hitchhiking trip I took from Brattleboro and a few songs mixed in. So if you want to support Valley Free Radio with a little moolala, you can call the studio 585-1033 and get to talk with Dwayne. He's here with a pencil, eager to fill out forms, and we have some prize-like things, too. What do you got over there, Dwayne?
Well, over here we have a couple of gift certificates to Sunrise over Florence Cafe. We have, for a $20 donation, two $10 gift certificates. We also have a Pedal People gift certificate. This entitles you to one bicycle trailer, 6x2 load of furniture / stuff moved. We can haul trash, recycle, washing machines, futons, couches, basically anything up to 30 pounds. Or one half-hour pedicab ride or bicycle trailer rides. And that's for a donation of also $20.
All right. Thanks, Dwayne. Again, you can call 585-1033 or you can also donate online at valleyfreeradio.org/donate.
So call now.
Yes, call now. So here is an interview that I did with Alex Jarrett.
I'm here with my friend Alex Jarrett, also known as Alex Sherritt, because he likes to share things. Houses and living situations. So we're going to talk about different kinds of group living situations, and especially when the people living there are part owner. So Alex, can you tell me about your living situation?
Sure. So 9 years ago, four of us bought a house together here in Florence, and three of us were on the mortgage together, but four of us own it, and we came up with a whole set of agreements. We kind of thought through, like, what is the worst case scenario of what could happen in a housing situation, and we wrote up a set of agreements.
Wait, can you go back? How did the four of you come together? What was that process like from the time the idea was conceived until, like, how long did these stages take along the way?
It took a while. For a couple of years, myself and my current co-owner, Matt, were meeting with a whole group of people thinking about buying land together and with houses. But the original thought was, you know, a lot more land than just one house was worth. And so we were kind of the last one standing to some extent and going through and, you know, we were, okay, we're still ready. And
after an original group of like eight or something, weren't there?
Yeah. And it's interesting to note that a lot of those people have figured out shared housing situations since then, but not with us. So it was helpful, I think.
Mm-hmm. So it was you and Matt and
Tammy and you.
And so you were having these meetings brainstorming worst case scenarios, what would happen if someone died or broke up or...
Yeah. So, you know, we came up with things like we agree that we won't sell the house for 5 years. you know, from the date that we buy it. Or what if the person who's living there, the owner, can't afford to pay the mortgage anymore and they're behind by 3 months, then they have to move out and the other people rent it out to someone, you know, just because otherwise you'd lose the house. So just think about worst case scenarios. No, none of those worst case scenarios really have come to pass. But it's still been helpful to have that framework of agreements.
How did it work getting a mortgage?
So we, three of us, who had some credit history and had had income that we could prove, went in together to a mortgage, a couple different mortgage agency places, and applied. It was interesting at that time, a local bank would not even look at us. It wasn't, I guess it was too outside the realm of what they were used to. So we ended up needing to go with, you know, a mortgage broker company, which went fine, except that means they sell your mortgage to whoever after they're finished with it.
Can you just give some specifics, like how much money, what was your combined income?
Sure. Yeah, one of us had an income of just $10,000. I think another one was $20,000 and another was $26,000. So they just added all those together. So is that $56,000, I think. So that was considered, you know, that was considered our income together. And then they, you know, that was at the time, that was 2005. So that was at the time where it was pretty easy to get a mortgage. And I think that it might be a little harder today to do that. You might have to, you know, they might not give you as much money. But a lot of it depends on your credit score. And our credit scores were really good. Although, you know, I know for me, all I had was, had a credit card and paid it off every month, you know, for many, many years. So that apparently gave me a really good credit score, but I had never, you know, had a car loan or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. So you got the mortgage. How much, like if the combined income was $56,000, how much were you able to get a mortgage for?
I think the mortgage was for $240,000, and that was a little bit over what, you know, what they were supposed to give. You know, it's supposed to be something like 37% of your income can go to housing. So that was, you know, in the 40s, I think.
Like 40-some% of...
Yeah, but our credit scores were really good, so they trusted that we, you know, but there was also a time when, you know, a lot of bad mortgages were given out. So who knows? But we were certain that it would be fine because we knew we would have housemates and that we would be able to afford to pay the mortgage because we would have other people helping us out.
So you ended up finding a house. When did you buy this house?
In 2005.
Uh-huh. And how much was it?
It was $300,000, and it's a two-family house. So it's got... that when we first got it, it really only had two bedrooms per side, but we added an additional bedroom on each side.
That leads me to thinking about some of the financial benefits of living cooperatively. So how much do you pay for rent or mortgage? What are your monthly payments like, and of the people that live here, how much do people pay?
So we're paying, there's four of us and we each pay about $375 a month, which I know looking at how much, which wasn't, you know, was still actually a good deal, I think, even back in 2005, but now it's a really good deal. And just looking at what people are charging for rent around town. So it's been nice that, you know, our expenses haven't gone up very much. It's just been the taxes, you know, and any maintenance. And we set aside a lot of money every month, about $300 a month, just for a maintenance fund, so that, like, when the roof goes, you know, we, those of us who are owners, don't have to suddenly come up with all this money. We already have this money set aside. So it, for us, it just kind of feels like we pay this amount every month, which goes into a separate bank account. And then that is there basically for all things a landlord pays for. So if we needed a new fridge, that would pay for that. So that's been good.
So $375 a month is quite a bit cheaper than what a lot of people are paying for rent for just to rent a room and a house now. Why is it so much cheaper?
Well, the cost of housing has kept going up. So as people and just the rental market, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, like what's driving up the cost of housing?
That's a good question. That's a big question. I mean, I can say people moving from out of town, selling their houses in places where they're worth a lot, and then coming here and being able to afford more. Mm-hmm. That's one reason. It's also just there's a lot of demand because it's an attractive place to live, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people want to live here.
Mm-hmm. Have you considered asking people to pay more rent or mortgage?
No, I feel like it should really be set based on the expenses that you have. It's pretty complicated. I definitely feel in some ways like I would prefer not to be in this situation. I would prefer that this was a true cooperative, in the sense that everyone who lived here who lived here was a member, mm-hmm. Or on track to become a member. Mm-hmm. And as it is now, you know, we've always said, if you live with us for a year, would and you wanted to become a co-owner, then we would try to figure out a way to make that happen. No one has taken us up on that. And we don't really know how we'd do it exactly, mm-hmm. without maybe we'd refinance a mortgage, mm-hmm. Or something, and then include people in. But there's a lot of it's difficult to figure out how to make it a true cooperative, but it is a goal of mine to make that happen. Maybe when the mortgage is paid off, I think that'll be easier, because mm-hmm. That's really what sort of keeps, you know, you have to be able to get a mortgage, and if you're in an unusual situation like a housing cooperative, then that can be harder to get a mortgage. Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about some of the different options for group living situations?
Yeah, sure. So I think, I think different ways I've learned, there's the land trust idea, which is where you have a cooperative or association that owns the land, and the individuals own the houses that they build or buy, and they cooperatively decide how to use the land that they're built on. So that's one option that, you know, has worked really well. But it's you know, in this situation, there's not very much land and there's one house, mm-hmm. so. And then there's condos. A condo is really a democratically controlled association of owners, and a co-housing is a form of condo living. In one sense, it's just where the condo association, which is the co-housing association, has made rules that benefit community and benefit the things that they want to have happen in that co-housing situation. Mm-hmm. But anyone can buy in to, you can't restrict the sale of real property, and condos are considered real property. So anyone can buy in, which gives a certain sense of, like anyone can join. But then also you can stray from your initial values if you know someone comes who's not interested in your values, mm-hmm. or wants to change them, you know, there's a dynamic there. Mm-hmm. And then there's a true cooperative. There are a lot of co-ops in New York City where a building has been made into a cooperative, and that's where you own is a share in the cooperative, and you have a vote. You don't actually own your unit like you do with a condo. And it's also possible to restrict who can move in, which has its pluses and minuses. You know, you don't want to be discriminatory, or maybe some people do want to be discriminatory, but mm-hmm. I would prefer not to be discriminatory, but I want people who share common values. So and there's another form of cooperatives, which are, I guess, not true cooperatives, but student housing cooperatives. There's a lot of those in Madison, Wisconsin, and they're somehow connected with a nonprofit that, but the people who live there have some degree of autonomy about how things are run, but they don't have any equity. So equity is the money that you put in that becomes the portion of the property that you own. And then when you leave, you can take that.
Well, we're going to stop for a minute here and have a little song.
With my tail in the air. Stray cat, strut, I'm a ladies' cat. I'm a feeling Casanova. Hey, man, that's sad. Get a shoe thrown at me from a mean old man. Get my dinner from a garbage can. Cat style.
going to go back to the interview with Alex Jarrett in just a minute. You're listening to WXOJ LP Valley Free Radio, 103.3 FM. This is our fund week. If you want to contribute to the station, you can call at 585-1033 or donate online at valleyfreeradio.org/donate. Dwayne says, send us money or I'm going to go sit downtown and hold a sign.
That's right. That last song had your head bopping and your toes tapping. Well, for a donation of $30, we have Argentine Tango Lessons from Jacqueline Maidana or Social Dance Lesson 4-2, Salsa, Swing, or Waltz. Value of $75 for a $30 pledge. So please call in. I don't want to see Ruthie downtown.
All right. Now we'll go back to the interview with Alex Jarrett.
So, yeah, in these student co-ops, you have autonomy but to some extent, but you don't have equity. So it kind of gives people, it's a better situation for sure than just renting from a landlord. But it's also, it doesn't give you financial means to take with you to your next place.
So one thing I've been wondering about condos is like I have this negative association about condos and gentrification. Is there anything inherent about condos that contributes to that, or why this association, do you think?
I don't have all the answers on that one, but I have some speculation, which is when you convert to a condo, so condos are actually more affordable usually than a whole house, but when you add the value of all of the units in the condo together, it's more than what the house was before. Mm-hmm. But there's also a lot of speculation with condos, market speculation, where people buying, you don't have to live there to be. It depends on your condo association rules, but for most condos, you don't have to live there in order to own a condo. So people will buy condos and then rent them out or just buy them because they are thinking the value will go up.
Like as an investment rather than an actual home.
Yeah. So in cooperatives, you can actually restrict that sort of thing. So you can say, no, it has to be owner-occupied, or you can make the amount of equity that people can earn be limited in the sense that if the market goes up, you get a certain portion of that, or maybe even you get a portion that's based on the amount of value you've added by, improvements. But then another portion of the equity stays with the cooperative.
Well, now I want to ask you a little bit about how you like living with others, some of the things that are joys and some of the things that are challenges.
Yeah, well, I really like living with others. I think that, just the sharing of food and the sharing of meals and just having people around to talk to and bounce ideas off of and sing with, and it just brings me a lot of joy. And also brings me a lot of just savings of time. Like, if we, in this house, we have 5 meals a week that we cook for each other and then a lot of leftovers. And so that's just, it's really great to just have food around and not have to cook every night. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I think this house in particular has created a culture where people stop by very freely and we have weekly potlucks. So that are open to whoever we want to invite and our friends want to invite. So it definitely creates a lot of community there. Mm-hmm.
How about some things that are difficult about living with a bunch of people?
Yeah, I think, when the usual things apply, like someone's not doing their chore or someone has a different vision of what you want. Mm-hmm. And it takes time to have meetings mm-hmm. and to make decisions and talk to people and work through conflict. I think having a set of of agreements is very useful. That spell, you know, spells out sort of the expectations of living in a place. Mm-hmm. It spells out things like how do you make someone leave if they're not, I mean, you say, well, you're not, you make that they have to not be fulfilling those agreements. And because I've seen a lot of community houses, their downfall be that, or just housemates share situations where someone moves in who is not, you know, the expectations aren't clearly laid out as far mm-hmm. as like, we'll have shared meals, we'll share food, we'll have house meetings on a regular basis. And they decide they don't want to do those things. And then the other people end up leaving because of this person who came in who wanted to change things and wanted to not be as community-minded. But they can't figure out how to make that person leave instead. So laying these things out clearly saves you a lot of trouble.
Have you ever had a situation in this house where someone's been asked to leave?
I don't know. Do you remember? No, I don't think so. But we've had situations where we've brought up the issues, and I think at a certain point, yeah, someone, they have decided to leave because those, you know, we kept trying to resolve those issues and we couldn't. And the issues were things that were about the core agreements. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't just like, I don't like you. It was, you're not doing these things that we agreed to.
Mm-hmm. So I wonder if you could just give some specific examples of some of the agreements for the cooperative house where you live.
Sure. So we have some, here are some of them. It says, some shared meals. For example, each person cooks a meal once a week. Some shared food. For example, bulk, farm food, dumpstered food, things three or more people use regularly. Meeting weekly, or less often if we decide to. Nonviolence, willingness to communicate and discuss. Responsibility for bills, sticking to house agreements about chores and cleaning and energy conservation and quiet hours. Here's one, no broadcast or cable TV in common areas. No illegal drugs, smoking, or alcohol abuse on property. So those are some examples.
So you're a co-owner of the house. So when the people who are living here who aren't owners, when they're paying what is kind of rent, it's actually they're paying your mortgage.
Partially, right? They're also paying for maintenance and all the taxes and things that are direct expenses. But yes, there is that portion where they're paying the mortgage that increases the equity that we as owners have. And I feel like it's not ethical to have that money personally enrich us as owners, except to the extent that we do extra work. So, you know, we're doing extra work in terms of taking care of the maintenance of the house and such. But after that the money should be considered a kind of a cooperative, collective equity. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, we haven't made this into an official cooperative, so there's no one saying you can't use that money for your personal enrichment. Mm-hmm. But what we'd like to do is make that, when if we ever do convert to a cooperative or we ever have to sell the place, would say, well, we're taking that amount of money that you know the tenants contributed, and we're going to make that go toward, you know, helping other people start cooperative houses or some other way to benefit us communally, collectively, rather than individually.
So if you were to leave this house and, like, could you sell your portion? Or, like, if you were to leave, wouldn't you want some of the money back that you had paid into it to help you for in then your next living situation?
Yeah, and, you know, certainly the money that I paid in could be considered my equity. Okay. And that I could, you know, draw that out. But, of course, someone has to buy me out. Mm-hmm. And we'd have to refinance the mortgage, and probably in order for that to happen. And so, you know, it's sort of trying to create a And the question is, yeah, should all of that count, or should I also say, well, should we have a guideline of, you know, a certain amount just always goes toward collective equity?
Mm-hmm. Sounds like a lot of these things you just kind of figure out as you go.
Yeah, which is great. But then also, what if you don't trust your future self, you know? Yeah, and I'd like to think I trust my future self, but I like also, like, the bottom line of legal agreements is important. It makes a big difference in how you interact today. That, you know, when I'm also part of a worker cooperative, and it's super important that there isn't, that we legally all own it together, and have these agreements. Even if it never comes down to that in terms of we've never, you know, had to go to a court. But so I'd like to see that be a legal place someday.
In terms of people who want to own a home cooperatively, what are some resources out there that people can access to get support on that?
Well, there certainly are, you know, housing cooperative websites and resources around that. But, and it's something which, you know, like the agreements that we made in this house, we've shared with several other people. And I'd be happy to share them with folks to help others.
Place for us somewhere, a place for us, peace and quiet and open air, wait for us somewhere. There's a time for us someday.
Alex Jarrett and Ben Ross. That was the end of the interview with Alex Jarrett about cooperative living situations and things. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. It's our fall fun drive, and we depend on listeners like you to keep us on the air. New programmers like me, well, just speak for myself. I spend a little more money on electricity than most, I'm guessing, because I'm still trying to figure out all the buttons, and sometimes I just got everything on at once. So I'll try to get more efficient, but if people could donate, we can cover expenses like electricity, rent, things like that. And when you donate, you're helping support this community resource where pretty much anyone can have a show and say what they want, as long as it's, you know, fairly nice.
So a $20 donation, it breaks down to roughly 6 cents a day. I think you can just find that walking down the sidewalk in Northampton. So we still have our wonderful gifts. We still have those Argentinian tango lessons for a $30 donation. And the Pedal People gift certificates.
Thanks.
They move stuff.
And people. Thanks, Dwayne. So you can call the station at 585-1033 or valleyfreeradio.org to donate. You know what always stops me from giving during on-air fund drives? It's the fact that I don't remember exactly where I put my credit card, and I got too much else going on to look for it. If that's your problem, maybe I can help you find it. Because if you're like me, maybe you left it in the pocket of the pants you wore 3 days ago. Or in your travel fanny pack. Or maybe it's by the computer where you were in the middle of making an online purchase. Did you look in the dirty laundry basket? Or under the stack of papers on the counter? What about in Pulaski Park? That's where I left mine recently. So, go find that credit card and give us a call. 585-1033. Frances Crowe for sharing some of her dollars with us. While I'm at it, I'd like to mention the talk with Frances on Sunday, November 16th at 1 p.m. at the Northampton Historical Society. She's got a biography that's coming out, or a memoir book coming out. So that's at the Historical Saturday, the Historical Society Sunday at 1. Again, if anyone would like to donate, call 585-1033 to support Valley Free Radio.
Because we need a dollar.
Or more. So this next piece that I'm playing is a little story. Some clips that I did hitchhiking back from Brattleboro. This was actually last November, but here it goes.
So I'm sitting outside the Brattleboro Food Co-op in Brattleboro, Vermont. Sitting on a bench having a snack while the pigeons ask me for some crumbs. And I'm trying to decide how I'm going to get back to Northampton today. I came up here yesterday with a friend of mine. We drove up in her truck and we worked on her farm outside of Brattleboro for a while. And then spent the night with friends here. I need to get back to Northampton, to Florence, to work this afternoon. So I'm thinking about my options. It's about 10:30 in the morning now. I could take the 12:30 train to Amherst, but then I'd have to take the B43 back to Northampton and then walk up to Florence, so I probably wouldn't get back till about 3 o'clock this afternoon. I'd like to get back a little bit earlier. So the other idea I just had is I could hitchhike, and but first I would need to get some cardboard to make a sign and find a marker. I bet I could go over to my friend Emily. She's at work in the museum. I bet I could get a marker from her. Then I can make a sign, and then I can walk out. I'm not even sure which exit, where to go to hitchhike. I don't know the Brattleboro that well. But I could ask around and figure that out. So I think I'm going to go for that option. Unless I get really lucky and find someone here in the parking lot of the food co-op who just happens to be going back or going to Northampton. I'm keeping an eye out for Massachusetts plates, but I haven't seen any yet. All right, stay tuned. So hitchhiking, how do I feel about hitchhiking? It's a little stressful, but I do get an adrenaline rush. It's a little stressful if I don't have what feels like a safe pull-off area to hitch from. Like last time, Alex and I were coming from Brattleboro, and there was no place for cars to pull over by the on-ramp of the interstate. But we did finally get picked up. It just didn't feel like it was really safe from a traffic perspective. But I feel pretty confident that I would get picked up within an hour and probably get a ride back to Northampton or at least Greenfield. So it's worth a shot. So I'm not all that prepared for this. I just went to the Brattleboro Museum and Art Center, and my friend Emily gave me a magic marker and a piece of cardboard and suggested that I go down Canal Street till I get to I-91 and try that interstate exit. I don't even know what time it is. I don't have a watch or phone, really. I kind of have those things, but the batteries are dead. So I'm looking to see if there's a clock on a building downtown somewhere. I'll just ask somebody. Up Canal Street towards the interstate. Obviously, I'm a little bit nervous because I've eaten all the snacks that I got from the co-op for my little trip. It's a lot hotter out here than I anticipated, too. I don't know what today is, like the 20th? 19th? I'm not sure what it is, of November. And it's like 70 degrees out here and sunny or something. And I didn't pack clothes for hitchhiking, so the only undershirt I have on is this thin white t-shirt, which if I was a guy it wouldn't matter, but I'm not sure if I want to wear that hitchhiking. Now I gotta pee too, so I gotta find some bushes to pee in before we hit the interstate. Alright. So I stepped into the bushes to pee, and there are these bushes here, little bushes. All the leaves are gone because it's late fall, but they have these little balls, like little white balls about the size of grapes. They look like mothballs hanging off of the tree. I think it's fruit. I don't think it's an insect pod. It's some kind of fruit pod. It's very spongy. It looks like it has like one seed in it. Blah. At first it tasted sweet, but then it tasted bitter, so I'm not going to eat it. But it looks really cool. I think I'll bring some home with me. And then I can look it up in the book and see what it is. It's a
pretty hot out here, like I said, with the sun beating down on the asphalt. I tried to roll up my pant legs. Well, I rolled them up, and then I saw that my socks were mismatched. So then I rolled them back down, because I don't want to look too helter-skelter out here when I'm looking for a ride. What about my hair? Like, I'm always wearing a hat this time of year. Now my hat's off, it's so hot. My hair's up every which way. I feel like I'm trying to hitchhike my pajamas. So now I'm walking down Canal Street still, coming up to the interstate. The sidewalk that I was walking on has just ended. Alright, I gotta stake out a good place. North 91, South 91, South 5. Alright, South 91 is what I'm looking for. Hopefully there'll be a place on the on-ramp, a little shoulder on the on-ramp where a motorist can pull over and they give me a ride if they so choose to stop. First I gotta get there. Trucks, cars, cars, trucks. No crosswalk. Note to editor, it's probably easier to leave this recording from the on.
I didn't get around to editing some of this, so I have to pardon some of the roughness. And the wind. The wind and the microphone's kind of hard, or the recorder's kind of rough.
All right, there's the South 91 sign. On-ramp doesn't look particularly inviting as it goes around that curve. I'll see. You may ask why I'm hitchhiking. Here's why, because I believe in sharing rides. And I guess I could have shared a ride with a friend coming back this afternoon. But like an element of adventure. And I like giving people the opportunity to be kind.
So I was heading towards the ramp, the on-ramp to I-91, and this car pulls over in the middle of the entrance ramp, and I run up and I open the passenger side door, and the guy in the driver's seat, he looks friendly enough, so I get in and say, "Thanks for stopping." He doesn't say anything, he just puts the car in gear and continues on to the entrance ramp. So I put on my seatbelt and say, "You're going south, right?" I mean, it's obvious he is, but he still hasn't said anything. I was just trying to be conversational. As we get to the end of the ramp where it joins with 91, the woman in the car in front of him has just stopped in the middle of the lane. There was this little part of me that thought, this guy's a creep, and the woman in the car in front saw me in her rearview mirror, saw me get in, and now she's blocking his way to save me. But after a couple seconds, she pulled out onto the interstate, and so did he. But he still hadn't said anything. When we got up to speed on the straightaway, the driver reached into a compartment of his dashboard and pulled out a black metal cylindrical object about the size of a bike headlight, and he held it up to his Adam's apple. "This is my voice box. That's why I didn't say anything earlier," he said.
So I was only out there for like 5 cars waiting, and I was just about to pull out the recorder and say how optimistic I felt because I'd just gotten there. Then like the 6th car that goes by and I hear the beeping and I turn around and the car is stopped waiting for me. So I go running up and I jump in and I'm sorry, I didn't even introduce myself. My name is Ruthie. What's your name?
What's your name?
Ruthie.
Ruth.
Yeah.
Billy.
Nice to meet you. Could you tell me like why you stopped to pick me up?
Because you needed a ride.
Yeah, thanks. It was pretty simple for me, too. That's why I was out there, because I need a ride. I was trying to get home. I'm really appreciative. I have to work this afternoon, so that was...
Where do you work?
I'm part of Pedal People. It's a bicycle hauling cooperative. We haul trash and recycling compost on bicycles and bicycle trailers. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. It's just in Northampton.
No.
No, but I have a route to do this afternoon, so.
Oh, good. That's all right.
Interstate across from Walmart, so now I'm trying to figure out how to jump the fence with my backpack and stuff. Yeah, so he was, I don't know, probably in his 60s, Vietnam vet, used to live in Florence, North Hampshire, trying to just live enough to meet basic needs, food, water, shelter, love. He said he used to be homeless and drinking, getting high for a long time, but now he's trying life on the other side. He said he got a $440,000 settlement from the VA a while back, and he kept some of it. Reasons why I hitchhike sometimes. Well, because there's so many cars going by all the time. All these cars headed to the same direction, headed in the same direction. And most of the vehicle is empty space. Usually there's what, like, I don't know, there's thousands of pounds being moved, when most of the time the person in the driver's seat only wants to move about 150 pounds. Maybe 200 pounds. So it just seems logical to me that it would make more sense to share rides. Sometimes pre-arranged ride shares, like through Craigslist, those rides, it's extra computer time, and sometimes it can be frustrating trying to find something, and they don't always work out. Just a lot of energy spent in communication about the ride. Whereas hitchhiking, about the only time it takes making your sign and going out to the exit and standing there till someone picks you up. It's a lot easier for short distance trips, I think. Maybe I'll ask more people their thoughts on that.
So that was the end of that, and I made it back to Northampton pretty easily, and I just wanted to play another song.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca road.
Just the traveling.
When along came a semi with a high end canvas covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca Mac with me, you can ride.
I'm trying to
so
cut out that other sound.
Then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, I've traveled every
okay, I can't figure out how to work this computer, so.
Man, across the deserts, bare man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Tampa, Panama, Mattawa, La Paloma, Bangor, Baltimore, Salvador, Amarillo, Tocopilla, Barranquilla, and Vidalia. I'm a killer. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts, bare man. I breathe the mountain air, man.
travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Boston, Charleston, Dayton, Louisiana, Washington, Houston, Kingston, Texas, County, Monterey, Faraday, Santa Fe, Tallapoosa, Glen Rock, Black Rock, Little Rock, Oskaloosa, Tennessee, Tennessee, Chicopee, Spirit Lake, Grand Lake, Devil's Lake, Crater Lake, Beach Lake. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts, bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Of travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Louisville, Nashville, Knoxville, Ombabaka, Shepherdville, Jacksonville, Waterville, Costa Rica, Pittsfield, Springfield, Bakersfield, Shreveport, Hackensack, Cadillac, Fond du Lac, Davenport, Idaho, Jellicoe, Argentina, Diamantina, Pasadena, Catalina, see what I mean? I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts, bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I've traveled, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Pittsburgh, Parkersburg, Gravelburg, Colorado, Ellensburg, Rexburg, Vicksburg, El Dorado, Larimore, Atmore, Havistaw, Chattanooga, Chaska, Nebraska, Alaska, Opelika, Baraboo, Waterloo, Kalamazoo, Kansas City, Sioux City, Cedar City, Dodge City, what a pity. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts, bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Of travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been everywhere.
All right there, Johnny Cash and a little bit of Ruthie Woodring there. And I've been everywhere. So we still have those dance lessons. Argentinian tango lessons with Jacqueline Maidana. And some social dance lessons. Learned some salsa, some swing, some waltz. I don't see any country in there, but I'm sure she knows how to do that too.
So call 585-1033 if you'd like to pledge. And stay tuned for Democracy Now! At 5. You've been listening to Out There. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring, with Dwayne Rainey here in the studio with me.
Well, we're going to leave you with the usual thing. The only thing I can say, as I've said to many people, is this title just about puts it all into focus. It's called With a Little Help from Your Friends. Remember it. Stand up and walk out on me. Lend me your ears and I'll sing you a song. I will try not to sing out of key. Oh, baby, how you